bright palette of colour.
Life is full of these grey areas. It's not just black and white.
An identity-forming experience.
You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast with discussions and insights on art, politics, music and more here on eastsidefm.org.
If you are still seated, I'd be very surprised.
It's Ruth Hesse here taking you through till 6 o'clock and we've got some wonderful guests in the studio today. Christine Logan, who is the creative director of the next production of Peer Gynt, which is going to take place across the road from the 30th of June till Sunday the 3rd of July. And Elaine Hudson, one of the stars, someone who's a star of this actual station. She's been in here many times. She's done book readings that were wonderful. I haven't been able to lure you back to do those. There was a wonderful series. You did some excerpts from Rachel Carson's Silent Spring.
Loved that.
And we were doing environmental theme. But you're back in today because there is a wonderful production which is using a new adaptation of the original Henrik Ibsen play with the full score that Edvard Grieg wrote for the premiere of the play in 1876. You've got everything but horses and elephants involved. It's an enormous production.
No, we have a horse.
And you have a horse.
No, really?
Yes. No.
You haven't met horse yet.
Oh, my goodness. You've actually got a horse. So everything, including the kitchen sink, a vast array of performers of all types.
Children. There are little children.
There are little children.
Who bite Peer Gynt's bum in a very environmentally healthy way.
So we've got laughter and we've got seriousness. Tell us a little bit, Christine, tell us who on earth convinced you to take on, I don't know how many instruments there are involved just in the orchestra, but who convinced you that you could do this, marshal all of this and then put it on in the Paddington RSL?
To be honest, Ruth, I'm still not convinced, but we're doing it. The idea came when we were having coffee at the Berkelow bookshop because we wandered up to the second-hand area and found a script where Ralph Richardson and
Sybil Thorndike
had performed it at the Old Vic. And we thought, well, that's a bit interesting, and took the book home and read it. And then Peter Alexander, who's a music director, found the full score of it, which had never been performed because they only found the whole score in 1988 in a library in Bergen in Norway. The Peer Gynt suites are very popular, but the whole score
had been lost
had
or
been
mislaid.
Lost. Yes, yes, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was written specifically for the play. So most people, the play's hardly ever been done. The last production I can remember in Sydney is in the 70s at the Opera House with John Derham playing Peer Gynt, and I think Pamela Stevenson was Solveig, and Betty Lucas played my role. But no, I suspect not the music. They would have just had the play, and it goes for a long time. The play takes perhaps about a day to read, we're doing a. Maybrit Ackerholt has done a wonderful translation.
She's one of the premier dramaturgs in Sydney,
and she is the real thing. She is actually Norwegian.
That would help.
and what's really special, Ruth, is that she's actually acting as a dramaturg for us on this play. So she's coming to rehearsals, and it's made me realise the value of having dramaturgs, which I think have been, lessened over the years.
Well, actually, when she was installed at the Sydney Theatre Company, there was a lot of work done trying to get the message out that dramaturgs, and they became a little bit popular, but in Australia the arts are so underfunded that actually getting money to pay for actors and screenwriters and so forth is very difficult, let alone what some people think is the icing on the cake, having a dramaturg or an intimacy coach or many of these other support people who come in to make sure that the production can rise to the greatest heights. But
yeah, I think we went through a period in Sydney where dramaturgs were part of the scene. When James Waits, for example, was working with theatre companies, who had a literary Rex Cramphorn, so you got a literary mind as well as a wonderful theatrical imagination and that great respect for text. And I think also a world where the people that translated the plays could actually speak the language. We've gone to a period where people do translations who actually can't speak the language and they somehow confect, don't they, Christine, a version. But to have May Britt there and she can talk and she can speak in, she knows several Norwegian dialects, and it's just an absolute godsend.
And we're still, we've exchanged text messages in the last 24 hours, haven't we?
Yes, altering a scene.
Nuance, tweaking.
Yes. Because I was having trouble, Ruth, with a moment in the rehearsal. Couldn't work it out.
You've discovered the joys of working with Elaine. Not only has she got an historian's instinct for detail, but no moment goes unacknowledged.
I should have had this conversation before we started rehearsals.
Well, it's just, I mean, I've worked with Elaine and it's always a joy, and she also cooks great scones and cakes. So.
I haven't done that yet, Ruth.
Haven't done that yet. Well, you've got something to look forward to. But you've spent 26 years working behind the scenes with so many different venues and theatre companies, from the New Theatre to Nimrod, which was the precursor of what we now know as Belvoir Street, and Opera Australia. So you've got this breadth of experience that's meant that you got the chutzpah to take on Peer Gynt for Endangered Productions. Just what are some of the greatest challenges that you've faced?
Look, it's so episodic, Ruth. I mean, we've got 58 different characters played by our cast
58.
Of
58.
Yes,
played by our cast of 14 last time I counted, and it's you go into rehearsals and you think, oh my God, who have I got coming in today? You know, but one of the lovely things, Ruth, is that from my days working at the Nimrod, I have a little house up in Blackheath, and I found that the wonderful Aubrey Miller had retired up there.
That's true. And the theatre director of great renown.
Yes, and Maybrit Ackerholt is a good friend of his. So she asked him if, you know, we had a meeting, and it was an afternoon tea that started at 3 o'clock and sent him home at 11 o'clock that night, talking about his life as well as
because he's not long back in Australia.
And he's actually directed Peer Gynt twice. And
was that in Singapore?
Yes. So that has been a huge bonus because he's such a wonderful, generous man, and he came to the original reading, and he's trying to get to as many rehearsals as he can now, but the trains are out going to Blackheath.
I think it's interesting, Christine, because it's interesting in life and in the theatre how you meet up with things and people from the beginnings of your life or career. Like we were talking, a great friend we have in common, we didn't even realise we'd known that person. And Aubrey, when he was a student, I'm imagining, at NIDA, maybe he was a teacher, I've forgotten, but Alexander Hay, who was my acting teacher, did a performance of Peer Gynt which went for 5 hours that he never forgot. And the actors who were in it never forgot, and they were still talking about it when I arrived. So Aubrey has, it's that when you do these great plays, there's this enormous history. So, I mean, I love doing new writing, but to do these great classics, you feel like you're being sort of, you're travelling along in some sort of slipstream, and you're catching up, and you're also inheriting all sorts of things from the past. So it's a real, I think, when Christine approached me, I was, I didn't hesitate for too long because the idea of doing it was just thrilling. And also, I know Philippe has mentioned, Philippe Klaus is playing Peer Gynt. The fact that there are many, many of the performers that are musicians and singers. Like, so you've got an actress on stage, Solveig, and she's got this beautiful voice. So she just bursts into song and you think, oh, my goodness me.
So a joy to be involved with these other creative artists.
Yeah, just wonderful, because we don't often get that in the theatre. And also we don't often have live music in straight theatre.
No, very rarely. Don't. Well, the budgets, once again, just don't run to it.
No.
And many musicians as well as actors will work for free.
Yes.
But there's a limit to, and also staging. So you've got the Paddington RSL. It is a big room up there. It's set up for a kind of supper club situation, I suppose, with a bit of tiered seating and rather a large stage. That was important for your 58 characters and all the instruments and the horse and everything else?
Well, What we try to do, Ruth, the shows that we've put on before, is actually present classical music in an informal setting so that it's a relaxed kind of space. So,
what, do you think people get intimidated
into enjoying this?
Because it's too stiff and proper and you're not supposed to make a noise and you're supposed to be in your best clothes?
Yeah, I think I read an interesting paper about that, that they, you know, the research had found that people are intimidated.
And it's
there's a whole generation of younger people who are sort of growing out of hip-hop and pop music and looking for somewhere else to go. So the Paddington RSL is perfect for us because people can sit in some cabaret seating and also bring drinks into the show and watch it in a relaxed, enjoyable environment that just takes all the formality out of it, you know?
Absolutely, being able to have a soda water or...
And it is rather, for all its renown as a classic, it is a rather weird, informal piece. As Christine said, there are so many different scenes, all different. You suddenly think, what sort of play is this? Some fantastic scenes. Then you'll have a scene which could come from a straightforward piece of theatre. And you get, it's weird, isn't it, Christine? The metaphors, the imagery. Ibsen was a one-off. I mean, he had the most extraordinary imagination and fearless, really, in what he decided to put down on the page. He didn't care whether people loved it or hated it. He put it down, and if they liked it, they liked it. They didn't, they didn't. Mostly for his, thank God for the fact that he had to pay the rent, they end up loving it. But it's true, isn't it, Christine? He was fearless in what he put down.
Yes.
So who was or is Peer Gynt? What kind of character is this person, Peer, and why did someone ever stage an 8-hour version of the play? It must be a gripping tale.
Well, he's based on a Norwegian folk tale of the Ash Lad, which is quite, it's got elements of the story that Ibsen used. But it was Ibsen's comment on Norway, the story, because he was very disappointed in the Norwegian people and government. And he wrote this play when he was in Italy.
In Sorrento.
And he was so disappointed that Norway hadn't defended Denmark in the wars. And this is about a fellow who doesn't take responsibility. He's actually, he lives by the motto of live for yourself. And
that doesn't get you very far, does it?
Well, it doesn't. And it's interesting because that's the Ayn Rand, the Republicans guru, used the Peer Gynt allegory in her writing and the Gyntian thoughts. And she was actually praiseworthy of that.
Oh, she thought, because he's kind of charming, isn't he? Now, here's a description of Peer Gynt. The loaferish ne'er-do-well, the irresponsible vagabond and dreamer of the Norse folklore. So there is something about him that's very appealing.
Oh, very appealing.
But he has to learn a big lesson.
He gets that from his mother.
Right.
All his charm comes from his mother. I don't know who plays her.
The son of a Norwegian peasant woman.
I found this little thing about Ibsen said that... his name was still well known locally when Ibsen would do those walks, Christine, up in the hills, collecting folk tales. He had to do that once because he couldn't pay his rent, so he made up this project. He'd go and collect stories, and one of them was Peer Gynt. He said, his name is still well known locally, but little is known of his life. Consequently, I had very little material on which to base my work, but this gave me a greater measure of freedom. So the play is like this fantasy, out of body experience, I can only describe it as.
Wow, it's sounding actually quite psychedelic and surreal.
It is very psychedelic.
What was he on?
Yeah, what mushrooms were there in those mountains?
Well, he liked other things.
Well, he originally wrote it as a poem, and it wasn't meant to be a play.
And then he just got carried away with the characters. Yes. Peer Gynt obviously just infected him, and the result was this wonderful piece that you're going to share with us.
Infected is a good word.
Yeah. And he's infected all of you. Well, thank you so much for coming into the studio. It's always so much fun to have actual live people in here. And I'm just going to remind the listeners that it's Thursday the 30th of June, coming up very shortly, to Sunday the 3rd of July. You can go to trybooking.com if you want to select a date and book a ticket straight away, or several. It's going to be at the Paddington RSL, and I wish we had all afternoon to dig deeper, because I can see that there's a great deal
and
of gold to be found.
If listeners do want to dig deeper, the website for Endangered Theatre Productions is magnificent.
It is indeed.
So much on it, not only about Peer Gynt but other things, but so much resource material that people can look at and read and enjoy. And also read about all the performers, and they'll be absolutely amazed.
It's a great cast, and if you go to endangeredproductions.org.au, the subtitle of that site is Music Theatre Across the Ages. So you can explore the past productions, which look very interesting. The Beggar's Opera, Double Trouble, Nordic Noir, all very groovy, and Coffee Cantata. So go to that to have a bit of an explore of the creative genius behind it, embodied today by Christine Logan sitting opposite me and Elaine Hudson. Thank you so much for coming in today, ladies.
Thanks, Ruth.
And can I just say one more thing, Ruth?
Yes, absolutely.
That we've got some fabulous musicians, because we've got
we've got
a pool of 30 musicians, a pool coming from the Sydney Symphony. So they're actually, they're playing for us for probably much less than what they should be, but
probably is.
But they actually love the music, you know.
So fantastic.
And we have a choir.
And a choir.
Oh.
And the horse.
and a pig.
I'm just going to try and find a little bit of Peer Gynt here. Let's see if Spotify is going to come up with it for me. Yes, here we are. And I'm going to play this as you ladies leave the studio. This is suite number one. Here we are. Just a slow start.
Beautiful.
And you'll all recognise this, listeners. All right. Thank you and good luck. Break a leg.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.